And welcome to OSW Reviews, the old school wrestling vodcast. We bring it live from the 80s via satellite in glorious grapple vision. This is your host, Jay Hunter, and this, the inaugural edition, the inception, if you will, of video reviews of old school WWF pay-per-views. And where better to start than at the granddaddy of them all, the first ever Capital Carnage. Only kidding, this is WrestleMania 1. Before we get started on the review, I just want to go on a quick preamble about WrestleMania and the state of pro wrestling in general coming into this event. I just got to do this for WrestleMania 1 so everyone's on the same page, brah. In the late 70s, America's wrestling was split up into different territories, many of whom were part of the governing body called the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance, and Vince McMahon Sr.'s WWF wasn't. At the time, it was strictly against working practice for different promoters to go head-to-head with each other. You know, running shows in their own town, poaching talent, that kind of thing. They had a working deal. But McMahon had loftier goals, to unite the whole of America under his pen, under his iron fist. Thanks to Vince Jr.'s ruthless entrepreneurship, fantastic foresight and business acumen, McMahon started buying up talent and regional TV slots, and immediately he started reinvesting the money into doing the same over and over again, so he was able to sign the biggest names and invest wisely into production values. By the mid-80s, it was really just Vince McMahon's WWF, JCP, Jim Crockett Promotions, which would turn into WCW, and waning territories like the USWA, AWA, that kind of thing. Vince's company continued to grow, setting up national syndicated deals all across America on regional TV, i.e. in specific states only, and then cable TV on the USA network, which is broadcast all over the country. So while Crockett was viewed as more of a regional southern wrestling, Vince's World Wrestling Federation was in the mecca of media attention in New York. So it was quite lucky that Vince McMahon was around the Northeast, living paycheck to paycheck with his Madison Square Garden shows. At the same time, MTV was just starting out just down the block in New York City, and both the WWF and MTV decided to co-promote for mutual benefit. So the rock and wrestling connection was born, thanks to Lou Albano, really, who met Cyndi Lauper on a serendipitous plane ride to Puerto Rico. They hit it off. He appeared in her music video, Girls Just Wanna Have Fun, as her dad. The first of many music videos of hers to feature WWF wrestlers. She started the ball rolling on screen when she came onto Roddy Piper's interview segment, Piper's Pit. On screen, Albano heeled out on her, calling her a broad and going down the chauvinistic route until she smacked him with her purse. This led to two WWF specials on MTV. The Brawl to End It All, and The War to Settle the Score. On the former, aided by Lauper, Wendy Richter ended Moolah's 28-year run as women's champion, which was across the NWA and the WWF. And on the latter, Moolah's protege, Leilani Kai, took the belt from Richter, setting up the rematch at WrestleMania 1 6 weeks later. But the main event going into WrestleMania 1 was Hulk Hogan. A quick word on Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan wrestled in the WWF for Vince Sr. in the late 70s as a heel. The word Hulk itself is licensed from the comic book character from Marvel, and Hogan was the Irish name that Vince Sr. gave him. Hogan did a 3-year stint in New Japan Pro Wrestling, where he was a megastar. There, he George Lucas himself, selling a shit ton of merch and making all the profit. He returned to America to film Rocky III. Vince Sr. fired him over this, believing it to break kayfabe and unacceptable for a wrestler to take time off for this reason. So instead, Hulk went to Vern Gagne's AWA. Vern soon turned Hogan face, coming out to Eye of the Tiger and ripping the t-shirt off and using the term Hulkamania. He soon rose to face AWA champion and Gagne's best mate, Nick Bockwinkel. But Gagne didn't want Hogan as champion because, 1, he didn't have good wrestling fundamentals, and 2, Gagne and Hogan couldn't agree on the cut of Hogan's merch sales. Think about that. The AWA's Vern Gagne turned down Hulkamania. Hulk Hogan was a huge international celebrity, and Rocky III had just come out. Whoever had Hulk Hogan was going to be the leading wrestling company in the country, and the world. Gagne also wanted more control over Hogan's Japan bookings. So the WWF, now spearheaded by Vince Jr., swooped in and got Hogan. And thanks to Hogan's amazing showmanship and Vince McMahon's talents, they made each other millions, and the WWF would rule the wrestling world for the best part of a decade. The WWF's version of Hulkamania started the day he won the WWF title. But when was that? WrestleMania 1? No? Those MTV specials? No. It was an MSG house show on January 23rd, 1984. Although returning to the WWF as a heel in December 83, Hogan turned face by doing a run-in and saving Bob Backlund in early January, and 3 weeks later captured the title from the Iron Sheik, Bob Backlund having a kayfabe injury. Should remember that booking for WrestleMania 9. The main event of WrestleMania 1 is Hogan and Mr. T versus Piper and Orndorff. This stems from MTV's The War to Settle the Score, which had Piper and Hogan in a title match that ended in a big schmoz. Lots of training vignettes aired the weeks prior. You know, it's actually an urban legend that WrestleMania was originally going to be called Hulkamania, since the whole event was just a vehicle to promote Hulk Hogan. There's no doubt he's going over. But it's much better for all involved that they decided to keep the title more generic. At the time, they had no idea that this show was even going to be a success. Actually, it was looking like it was going to be a failure, based off ticket sales and general buzz until 7 to 10 days leading up to the show. Anyway, I'll talk more about that later. Let's find out how the first big use of wrestling and celebrities on the grand stage all went down. Yep, this is the throw to the pay-per-view rundown. Welcome everyone, this is the inaugural edition of OSW Review. So this is Jay Hunter talking, the host, joined tonight with Mr. OSC.
Hello.
Yes, very good. Neo.
Thank you.
Well, the three of us do comprise of the Brig. We're being wrestling mates for over 10 years. Steve, you've been watching wrestling for?
Probably now about 25 years, I'd say.
And you are how old?
28. So that can't be true.
Alright, let's go to this pay-per-view run then. Okay, WrestleMania 1 starts with an opening video in space to Phil Collins' Easy Lover as Vince runs down the card. It's kind of reserved. We'd see him get really amped, really loud, really coked up over the next few years as he introduces the pay-per-views, as he throws to our commentators for tonight, Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura. Alright, then you see a young-looking Fink who meekly announces, "Welcome to WrestleMania." It's, you know, there's no pomp or circumstance. As Mean Gene sings Star Spangled Banner, not America is Beautiful. Unlike Christina Aguilera, he has crib notes and that he refers to constantly, but does get it right. You know, long-time WWF ring announcer Howard Finkel is often credited with giving WrestleMania its name. If you saw the True Story of WrestleMania DVD, he says it's comes from. Well, you're shaking your head. Did you call me a liar?
No, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen Best of WrestleMania, whatever it is.
All right, that's good. It's good. Give it a watch. Like anyway. So WWF announcer Mean Gene Okerlund, he did volunteer to sing the U.S. National Anthem after the original scheduled celebrity singer no-showed, but they wouldn't name names. Try to poke
them. Here's them with Cyndi Lauper in the crowd.
Yeah. Ready-made celebrity guest singer there.
Yeah? Anyway. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've heard her sing, so.
I suppose Mean Gene probably did a better job.
So, throw to Alfred Hayes, no relation, who sets up the first ever match at WrestleMania. So it's Tito Santana versus, from parts unknown, weight unknown, it's the Executioner.
Talent unknown.
So do you want to add any thoughts about this match, Rosie?
Okay, what have I got here? Just wanted to say that the interviews themselves were atrocious. You're going to hear me say that word probably a lot during the next couple of hours, but now, the Masked Executioner, initially I was thinking because of they were setting it up with this feud of Greg Valentine, I was like, oh, it must be Greg Valentine. And then I realised this guy has a lot more charisma than Greg Valentine, and that's saying something, to be honest. It's not saying much.
Is this with having a mask on?
He's got a mask, and he kind of had a high-pitched voice. So do you know who the actual Executioner was?
Well, I'll see. The Executioner was Playboy Buddy Rose, who's mainly from the AWA, who had notable feuds with Piper and Snuka. This is his only WrestleMania appearance, which it's not really an appearance, though, is it? Because this is a generic gimmick, like.
Yeah, pretty terrible. But anyway, a couple of points that I noted was something we were discussing just a couple of weeks ago. that really bugs me about wrestling, the crisscross to start the match.
Yes! Get in. This is like, something... When did we lose the crisscross?
I don't know, but it really... Maybe it'll make a comeback, but I have to say, it went on for about, what, 20 seconds? More, maybe? I don't know what they were doing. I don't know what they were trying to achieve by running in the ropes and avoiding each other. Anyway.
I think one of them might have gotten gassed by that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's the ultimate warm-up to a match. Like, they look so athletic. I mean, it's scary.
They can run for 20 seconds.
And I remember, that's like 20 seconds of a 4 minutes 50-second match, you know. So, I mean, first part of this match, you know, we're crisscrossing.
Yeah, it was... So, the other thing I noticed was, I think you noticed this as well, that the ropes were quite wobbly, flaccid, if you will.
And as soon as they bounce off the rope, it's like, what's this?
Yeah.
And it's like an indie show.
Then the other thing then was, I have to admit, I was not at all impressed with Santana. I thought he was a bit quicker, a bit more agile, a bit more athletic, but a bit sluggish. Probably didn't have a huge amount to work with, but quite a nice figure four to win the match.
I see how jauntily he applied it. He was definitely working as a pace, you know. Just some notes on that. Before the bell, Ventura actually says that WrestleMania is living up to everything he expected it to be. This is before the first match. You know, that's just a little premature. You might notice, depending on the arena, if they like the crowd or don't like the crowd, so sometimes it looks like a 70s house show and sometimes it looks like a 85 house show. You know, if you notice, Executioner, who was constantly Bubba Ray, you know, he's hitching up his jocks.
Didn't notice that.
No, I was looking at his jocks very closely.
Oh, yes, I said you were.
So Trish Stratus must be pissed, you know, she's always giving out about that. So his flying forearm wasn't the finish either. It was just the setup. It's like very much like Shawn Michaels with the elbow drop into the Sweet Chin Music, I think.
Yeah, so it was, it was grand. It was...
Is this going to pass?
A pretty terrible opener to the first ever WrestleMania, though. I wasn't expecting, you know, TLC minus 10, but I mean, I was expecting something a little bit better than
just
that.
Just minus 10. Yeah. That's a step up from atrocious, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't good enough for an opener in the first WrestleMania.
Okay. So King Kong Bundy with Jimmy Hart versus SD Jones, and a bit with the squash. How did you feel about that?
SD stands for special delivery.
It's true.
Isn't that a baby? Isn't a baby a special delivery?
I'll get a...
Alright, please do. So SD Jones, he cut a decent promo actually before the match. I was a big smile. You knew he was the face, only a big smile on his face, pardon the pun. Served its purpose. So Bundy then main evented, what was it, the following year?
Yeah, that's my new two.
Yeah, so I'd imagine that, you know, typical, we still see them today. Kali, Big Show, you name it. These squashes, just fine for a squash.
Mm-hmm.
22 seconds of a squash.
No. 9 seconds. I actually noted this. They were talking about breaking a record. The previous record was 23 seconds, but they didn't... Did they mention when that happened or what the record refers to?
No, they just said it was 24 seconds.
23 seconds.
23 seconds.
And it was supposed to be 9, was it? But it was actually 23.
Yeah. Oh, right.
So, which is, man, you can call bullshit on that. Okay. He does. So, Monsoon says that Bundy's closer to 500 pounds, which is bullshit, really. Even if you go on a Wikipedia page, which is plus 50 pounds, he's 450, so, yeah. He also said, it calls Bundy a mountain with legs and feet and arms. So it's nothing like a mountain.
No.
So what would you say he looks like, though? There's been another description.
He looks, well, to me, he looks like a big baby. So there was two babies in the ring.
Hence the special delivery.
Yeah. No, any thoughts on what he looks like?
I think he's like money. He seems to get heavier and interesting.
Hey!
I think in like, you know, maybe... 320. Yeah.
Okay. I'd say he looks kind of like a condom with legs. Just a bulbous. Never mind. All right.
He has a fat neck.
Yeah, it's true. At least he won't. You know, he won't break it. Well, no one will pile drive him. So, Bundy gets a pinfall victory in a squash match. Post match in ring winner announcement. That's pretty cool. It's like the UFC. Yeah. Okay. So next match. How did that go for you? Is that just end to nothing?
It,
really?
As a squash, fine. I did notice the pre-Warrior days, the big splash off the canvas for the finish.
Oh, I love it. Is that the run horizontally, jump vertically?
Yeah, and naturally, it's obviously going to increase the impact tempo. So that was
almost
great.
Royalty free.
Okay. Match number three is Matt Byrne, the son of Tough Tony Byrne, versus Ricky Steamboat. And did you know, Steamboat debuted 3 days after Byrne, jobbing out the Brooklyn Brawler, aka Steve Lombardi. And previously, Steamboat had been engaged in a hot feud with Flair in the Mid-Atlantic. So I thought this match was just kind of there. What did you think?
I actually thought not bad. I think Matt Bourne had a decent gut-wrench suplex during the match, if I recall. That I was quite impressed with, especially for whenever 84. Matt Bourne, it wasn't... Wasn't Doink called Matt Bourne?
Very good. Yes, the one and the same, yeah.
They are?
Yeah, yeah, that's really? It. That is Doink okay. before his time.
Okay.
So, not Doink's first appearance, but Tough Tony Bourne's.
Note on a couple of things. The first is the pre-match interviews. So, Mean Gene, he interviews Matt Bourne. So Matt Bourne's talking to the camera, saying, you know, he's going to kick Steamboat's ass, blah, blah, blah. He walks away, and then all of a sudden, Mean Gene turns slightly to his left, and there is Ricky Steamboat saying the same thing to the camera about Matt Bourne. Why didn't they just say it to each other?
They're very polite people.
We've got two cameras, camera one.
This is crazy, because I was watching the Tag Classic version, and I assume we were watching the WWE version, because I didn't have any of these pre-match interviews.
Did you not?
No, I was wondering what you're on about. That's bullshit. Like, because this is probably the VHS rip from 85, I guess, or 86, whenever they brought it.
Should have had the pre-match interviews on it anyway.
But it sounds like I was missing out.
Yeah, you really were. Pretty special. And one other thing I noticed was Steamboat was jacked.
Oh, God. Crazy road shape.
Yeah.
From the big steamer.
And I thought it was hilarious. Gorilla says to Jesse Ventura, he says to him, and I quote, "You know what it takes to get in shape." Yeah, less said about that the better. I think we all know what it takes to get in shape in the 80s in WWF. The match itself was grand. I thought it'd be a bit quicker, to be honest, especially because Steamboat was in there. What about yourself?
Did you notice that, everyone in the 80s had very plain tights, but it was pure black versus pure white? Some kind of subtle, I don't know, heel face divide? I don't know. Thought that was nice.
Yeah, I think you're looking into that a bit too much.
Probably giving too much credit. Mm. There was an odd inverted atomic drop. It looked quite painful. One thing I do is I love the way wrestlers, it's an 80s thing, wrestlers don't sell like death when they're getting pinned. You know the way, because these days, you're on the ground, it's the 1, 2, and then they kick out at the last moment. And this one, he's trying to kick out from the one count. He's already flailing the legs. Like,
I was actually going to make that exact point. Not about this match, I think it's later on.
Yeah.
It actually is so much more realistic. Because think of it this way. Random crappy atomic drop. You shouldn't have to automatically sell a 2 count there. You know, you might sell a half count or a 1 count. So I have no problem with that whatsoever. I think it's more realistic.
Mm. It's actually like a fighter how it would be.
Yeah.
Wesley's kind of it's interesting the pace of the match compared to like what we're used to now, and in terms of their kind of back and forth. But it's very interesting the idea of Steamboat being like a high flyer, and how we kind of take it for granted now the way they're using the ropes as a device, where now like really then they're kind of limited to the turnbuckle. It's interesting the way he's kind of distinguishable back then because he's a high flyer.
I would agree with that. It doesn't pass muster these days, but back in the day, I suppose it was wow.
I suppose it's impressive jumping off the ropes with the ropes in that state back in the 80s.
Yeah, not breaking your leg, yeah. One thing that really annoyed me the whole night, and this is the first time I noticed it, was Lord Alfred Hayes standing right in front of the entranceway or whatever for the wrestlers. So the wrestlers are kind of walking out afterwards past him, and he's kind of getting out of the way to let the wrestlers past. really annoying.
That wasn't just for backstage segments. He was there just the whole night.
He was standing there the whole night. Just I have no idea what his job was that night.
Maybe he was like a toll or something, you know.
That was it, yeah. But
stamp or something.
No, I was. I have no idea why they needed Monsoon, Ventura, Lord Aftertaste, and Mean Gene. But that really annoyed me.
Is there any interview after this? Or?
There was a very. I can't believe you didn't see this pre-match interview.
Oh, this makes me sad.
Yeah, Brutus Beefcake and David Sammartino, who actually were walking to the ring as Lord Aftertaste was talking. And then they cut to the pre-match interview.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I love it. Just like in real life.
It's editing at its finest.
It's horrendous. And I you need to see this interview as well. What was this guy's name?
Luscious Johnny Valiant. The manager.
Yeah. Now, he... Who was it? Bruno and David were interviewed. Your typical... whatever. It's nothing of interest there. But then Brutus comes on with Johnny... So Johnny starts talking, you know, typical 80s heel, and he says to Brutus, you tell him, Brutus. So he kind of stands in front of him, and then he kind of realises and moves out of the way. And there's silence, dead air for about 5 seconds, because Beefcake obviously froze. Literally says nothing. Then he blows a raspberry into the microphone.
Like a newborn baby.
Don't, yeah. Beefcake, don't, what you gonna do, my man?
Wait.
That's enough! That's enough! I will not let this man talk!
That sounds amazing.
It is amazing. And Johnny then says, yeah, I'm the mouthpiece. You don't need to talk. I'm going to talk. And just picks up again. Hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
Was he having a laugh? Or is this...
No, he obviously didn't know what to do.
That's amazing. I reckon, like, he must have been wrestling for, like, 20 years at that point, you know?
Ah, no, not 20 years.
Well, you know, he's not a young spring chicken, like.
No, he's no Triple H, you know? No.
All right, so we got Brutus Beefcake with Luscious Johnny Valiant versus David Sammartino with Father Bruno Sammartino. I didn't think the two got along well together at all. They seemed like they were just wasting time until the finish. I don't know, do you want to take us through it?
Yeah, it's similar enough. I actually thought Beefcake did a decent job with his kind of heel stalling at the start. Yeah, he got the crowd into it. The crowd were obviously going to be into it because of Bruno Sammartino was there.
Mm.
So there was a lot of heat. I think Beefcake did his job quite well. Quite a few rest holes, as far as I remember. I have written down here, really boring match. It's Randy Orton boring. That's what I'm calling it. It was that bad.
Kind of Randy Borton.
Something like that, yeah.
Were there headlocks in this?
A lot of headlocks. Well, I think, was it David Sammartino was working the leg, I think, of Beefcake for quite a while. I was going in and out, to be honest with you. One thing I did enjoy was commentators talking about baby oil. Did you pick up on that?
Again with the baby. I did not. Go on. Go on.
Yeah, it sounded that Ventura was trying to justify why they use baby oil, that it's functional, but he never really explained why. And then he said, and Monsoon was very adamant that they joined in there, oh yeah, that it clogs up your pores so it doesn't let your skin breathe.
Mm.
I don't know what the relevance of that has to do with anything, and I suppose they don't...
I'd imagine that's a bad thing. You clog the pores and you overheat when you overexert yourself, but I guess it makes you're slippery, you know, so you're harder to, you know, get moves applied to you. Yeah?
Something
in at least they were discussing it, you know. You'd never hear commentators discuss, you know, trivial matters like that, but, you know, it's pragmatic.
Well, there'd probably pragmatic nothing matters. Else to say. I mean, there was nothing really going on in the match, but what did you think of it?
I was impressed that, like, because... you know, WWF and Bruno Sammartino are talking about, you know, footage that we don't have. But, like, Bruno just got a massive pop, you know?
Yeah.
So I reckon this should have been a tag match, including Sammartino and Valiant, and not this single stalling match until the bullshit finish.
Yeah.
Just on Bruno and Sammartino, you know, Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer compiled the top wrestling draws in the world based on gates and ratings, all blah, blah, blah. And Sammartino is number one. So, like, if you said greatest wrestler in the world... the guy who drew the most money, that's Sammartino. FYI, just Hogan's number two, Austin's number seven. He would have been higher if he wasn't only wrestling for about 3 years before he got injured. And Cena's number 16.
I'm shocked.
That's crazy.
That is shocking. I'm surprised that San Martino's number one. Was he wrestling for like 20 years non-stop or something? Mm.
But Arnie, he was huge. That means he's bigger than Hogan now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mental. Like.
I'm shocked about that. Well, what was Hogan?
Number two.
Okay.
Yeah, how'd you like that?
Yeah.
Another thing I find interesting about the pacing of this match where, you know, it's almost 13 minutes. So if you think you're watching this one individual singles match, you know, as you commented on, like, it does feel like a tag match. If you think, like, the main event with Hogan, like, was over 13 minutes, and, like, you're already, like, nearly 13 minutes of this match, which is longer than the last three you've already watched, it's broken the whole pace of the pay-per-view, because you're kind of exhausted, you know, you're kind of, like, you know, not that interested, you know, so you're kind of thinking, oh, I need a bit of a break from this, you know, so I found that this stage, the pacing was a bit unusual, that a singles match would be as long at this stage of the pay-per-view. I just found that the pacing for me kind of threw me off a bit.
Yeah, definitely. It was over 10 minutes before we just got the two run-ins and the schmals, you know?
Yeah, and what you were saying, you're right, that it was, everyone was just waiting for Bruno Sammartino to get involved. And when he did, there was a huge pop, and that's great.
The pop was more, because we want to go get some food.
yeah, it's finally over.
Did you like Beefcake's tights?
They were similar enough to what he was wearing like 10 years later.
Yeah, but he was wearing them in the same. And this is like the mid-80s, so this is kind of before, you know, Vince's cartoony wrestling, and he's already got his gimmick down, you know?
Yeah.
Although
they're
kind of heel stripper kind of...
They are a bit, aren't they? Yeah.
he's got the cuts just really high up.
he actually had a great look.
Mm-hmm. I thought David Sammartino, he's pretty small on stage. He played the Powerman gimmick, which is weird since he's so small. Gino admonishes Beefcake for being a bit oiled up. You know, that's what you were talking about. that's what you were talking about for you. Monsoon admonishes touching the referee, saying that you'll end up with the short end of the paycheck.
Yeah, I noticed that.
The stub.
Did you like the picture-in-pictures as well? So, like, they'd, like, show the match, and then they do picture-in-picture with either Valiant or Sammartino.
And
it's
I
cutting
think,
edge, like.
I think they were doing... Were they doing that later on in the Andre match as well?
Yeah.
I thought it was decent. Mm-hmm. One thing that annoyed me a little bit throughout the pay-per-view was the microphone. It wasn't hanging high enough up. So you could see it kind of swinging a lot of the time. Big swinging microphone.
Yeah. Big flip-flop.
There was a toe hold from Sammartino into a single leg ankle lock and back into an endless toe hold. And Gino commends camera number 5 for the shot. You wouldn't hear these days. Lots of stalling, lots of crowd working, rest breaks. It's like they're completely calling the match on the fly and they've no ideas, you know, just move to move. So, did you notice they say the word Pearl Harbor a lot? It's like, oh, he Pearl Harbored him from the back.
Didn't notice it.
No, racist. Okay. Pearl Harbor. So if someone cheap shot someone from the back, he Pearl Harbored him.
Okay.
They broke it out a few times. You know?
They wouldn't get away with that these days.
the match is thrown out, double DQ, 11:42. All right, so the next match is the Intercontinental title match, Greg Valentine with Jimmy Hart versus the Junkyard Dog. Was there any...
Yeah.
Was there a promo beforehand?
Yeah, Valentine, decent. So Valentine was fine, and then Junkyard Dog said that he wanted to chew on a bone, and he wanted to win the title so he could buy a lot more bones to chew on.
In the fish ever come in the world, I need myself a bone to chew on, and I can buy myself a whole lot of bones when I get my hand on that.
So that's kind of degrading the belt a little bit. The only reason he wants to win is so he can buy bones.
Are bones expensive, though?
I wouldn't have thought so. I would have thought he would have found them in a trash can.
That's sure.
Are they a rare commodity?
I wouldn't have thought so, no. Just open a trash can right beside Billy Gunn's pants. You got a few bones.
I have a bone to pick with you.
There's lots you can do with it.
Yeah, and Junkyard Dog, first wrestler of the night to get a ring entrance.
Excellent. Did they have the grab them cakes?
I don't know what it was.
All right, they must have had. I doubt they didn't pay for it.
Probably found it in the trash.
Beside the bones of Billy Gunn's pants.
Valentine, he came from Mid-Atlantic and he got the IC belt from Santana in September 84. So this match stems from JYD being Santana's best mate and being a lumberjack during a Tito Valentine match when a brawl broke out. Why Santana versus Valentine wasn't booked for this event?
Yep, no ideas.
Well, you know, you might as well not do it at WrestleMania. You know?
Yeah, why would you?
I might mention there's lots of basic movie editing transition, which is great, and I'm going to definitely use them in this video.
It's no radial wipes.
Okay. Star wipes only. There's a lovely catch the leg, swing around, and a headbutt, and the ref admonishes JYD. How do you feel about JYD with his rapid fire kind of dog headbutts, rolling left, and you know,
I love them.
Yeah,
I really thought they were there. I thought they were cool. Something I haven't seen before.
It was pretty over.
Things to do for a dog.
Yeah, exactly. What about yourself?
Oh, question here. Do you know what the word? You know, he's got thump on his arse, which is probably misconstrued in today's society. But do you know what that refers to?
Tell me.
He has a power slam. called the thump.
Oh,
right. It's just a power slam.
Original name.
Yeah. You think with thump it would be just like, I don't know, like a, you know, big wind up puncher, you know. No?
Yeah, it's.
He wouldn't want to have slam on his pants, maybe.
I don't know. I'd probably rather get. Would you rather get thumped or slammed on your arse?
Okay.
I thought it was a punch.
Yeah,
slam,
punch to your ass.
Oh, yeah. It was similar to your boy in TNA.
Who?
The Shore.
Robbie E.
That's the one.
Yeah, he's got a fist on his arse.
Yeah, the thump reminded me of the fist.
Excellent. Get a fist in your arse.
Exactly.
Ventura says that Valentine's making no bones about it, going to work on JYD's legs, and he fights like a pit bull.
Mm.
Why aren't there any hammer puns?
Mm, give me one.
I don't know, he's bringing the hammer down. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Maybe it's because
that was one pun, but I'm sure there's more. Like,
maybe it's because he's the heel and they didn't want to put him over. Who knows?
Yeah,
who knows?
That sounds right. Just FYI, JYD died in June 98 via car accident. And in 2004, he was inducted into Hall of Fame.
Now, JYD, wasn't he one of the most over wrestlers at the time?
I think... Definitely. He's got a huge gimmick and it was very well received. But I don't know how long that would last if he was actually pushed up the card. You know, like, because if someone's great in the undercard or the midcard, they might change their mind and turn on you if you went into the main event, you know?
Okay, and so there was no specific reason why he wasn't pushed. Did he even win the IC title at any point?
I doubt it.
Mm.
If there's a lot of people with no belts, like did Jake Roberts have the IC belt?
Never.
Right. So if he got the belt and Jake Roberts didn't, I'd be quite angry.
Yeah.
But I really don't think so.
Yeah.
Oh, good luck. So how did this match end?
This match ended, it was hilarious, and I thought of you, Jay, while I was watching.
As you regularly do.
So, the typical, we don't see it too much anymore, but, so Valentine got the pin with his legs on the rope, you know. So, and then of course the ref came to three, blah blah blah, everyone's a winner, apart from JYD, obviously. And then Tito Santana runs out, manages to convince the ref that the Valentine's feet were on the ropes. Why would the ref believe Santana? What is it about Tito Santana?
Well,
has he got a face you can trust? Like,
he does. He's a face, so all faces can be trusted.
Right. So if a heel had run out, the referee would have said, no, don't believe you.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
That's not really his bullshit, like, you know, unless another ref comes out.
Exactly.
You know.
And it depends on the set of your pants, obviously.
Oh, yeah, naturally.
It's true.
Wearing black or white.
Oh, yeah, he was wearing white, I believe, as you were saying.
He changed into his street clothes, so.
Oh, yeah, and... I don't think they were white.
So maybe he just saw he's a member of the audience.
Exactly. A genuine concerned member of the audience.
So,
And then Tito did one of your favorite spots. He kicked the ropes to indicate that Valentine's legs were on them. He couldn't have just said it to the ref.
No, he had
to kick the ropes to physically.
Maybe he was fixing them as well for, you know,
tightening them up.
Tightening them up again.
I don't know, or maybe he's vexing them. Anyway. So the face wins by DQ, and that gets big pop, but Do you think the crowd might have thought there was a title change?
Yes, I definitely think they did, by the sounds of things. And I wouldn't be surprised if JYD did as well.
Question, hot topic. JYD, he uses a headbutt. And I've noticed this hard head gimmick, as in, I can headbutt you, you can't headbutt me. Only foreigners and blacks.
Really?
Do you know any whites or Americans that have the hard head gimmick?
That's a Big Show.
Oh, he's got a hard head, has he?
I believe he does.
Maybe that's just because he's huge, like.
Yeah.
It would be hard to headbutt him, actually, you think about it. You'd have to take a bit of a jump.
You would, yeah. That's so true. I suppose nobody has headbutted him. But other than that, can't really think of him.
Yeah. Like, because when you think of hard heads, you think of, like, head shrinkers, that kind of thing. Or I'm sure Yokozuna did it as well.
I'm sure it is quite racist in that. Apparently they're stupid because they're not American. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they have a hard head.
Because
they're stupid, and there's a lot of bone and not much brain, maybe.
Oh, right. Maybe. No, that doesn't make any sense why JYD wants bone. You want brain, like.
I enjoy Jimmy Hart's. He had a big bump to the floor outside.
Mm-hmm. The match. Back the head as well.
Yeah, it looked pretty big. Yeah. Match was massively over the crowd. And then Gorilla, I believe, says at the end of the match that Greg Valentine is still the IC Championship. So there you go.
Alright, I didn't appreciate that Lady Cheaterly finish at all. There's another Pearl Harbor reference, you know, they hit from the back and right. So the next match is Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik, managed by Freddie Blassie, versus Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo, the US Express. Was there any promos beforehand?
Yeah, obviously the Iron Sheik was hilarious. The faces were incredibly boring. IRS spoke first, sorry, Rotundo. They were both in their jeans and t-shirts. He said nothing much. And then Barry Windham said, me and Gene were on our way to the ring right now. And they were in their jeans and t-shirts at the time. So, not sure if they were.
It's a transition.
Yeah. So, yeah, little disjointed there, but anyway.
Did they have the US Express? Did they have their entrance on the video?
They did.
Oh, and do you remember what song played?
Something horribly generic.
Oh, okay. Because, do you know, if you ever heard the wrestling album Real American, it's not Hulk Hogan's theme. It's actually Windham and Rotundo's theme. And so they used Real American before Hogan.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. And so when I was watching it, they actually cut out the entrance. So
okay.
there's the nothing. But if you were there back in 1985, yeah, bit of Real American.
So was Real American played again later on when Hogan came out?
I think, oh, you love this. He actually used Eye of the Tiger. But whatever, WWE and Subvision didn't want to pay for it. So we got Real American.
Great.
Great. Just fucking amazing. Right, yeah? The US Express, they did beat Adrian Adonis, or Donald, and Dick Murdoch for the WWF Tag Team titles in January, earlier in the year. Alright, can you take us through the match?
Just a point, I did appreciate that the US Express were wearing the same in-ring gear, as I always do for tag teams. Yeah, that was important. What did I see of note during the match? Quite funny, Rotundo drop kicks Iron Sheik and he falls forward towards Rotundo and out of the ring.
The Samoa Joe bump.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed that. Nothing else of interest happens in the match. To be honest with you, I thought it was a decent tag team match.
Excellent. Mm. Did you appreciate the culottes that Sheik had?
I did. Actually, just the other thing I wanted to comment on was the amount of time. The Big Russian getting off the ground. The Big Russian. It's like halfway through Jesse went, what's this guy's name? The Big Russian. So I was kind of amused by that. Yeah, there was some good commentary. But I actually thought it was an interesting match. It was actually entertaining. So I was kind of glad to be kind of picking up the momentum of the pay-per-view again from the kind of some of the earlier matches, but it felt like that, you know, actually as if the kind of the pace is starting to ramp up again to something, so I was kind of settling in and enjoying it then.
Cool. I was It just because it went from boring to interesting to boring, just with I love talking about Sheik's pants, like his remedy culottes, like it's the most interesting outfit I've ever seen him wear. Yep. Iran painted gold on the side, so that was pretty nice.
And love his his boots as well.
Yeah, they're pretty sweet. All right.
Just mentioned the ending. If that's all right.
Yeah.
So obviously enough, Sheik grabs the cane. From Freddie Blassie, hits Wyndham, I think, in the back,
mm-hmm.
Goes down, and we have new tag team champions. So then Lou Albano, of course, runs in and starts remonstrating with the referee about what happened.
Tito not available.
Tito wasn't available this time, and then the referee completely ignores him, so maybe he doesn't have that face that you really instantly want to trust. He also kicks the exact same rope that Tito kicks early on in the night, and I don't know why he's kicking any rope, because there's no rope involved in this one. But anyway, the decision stands and the heels come out on top.
A little trivia note that this is the first title change in WWF pay-per-view history, so you know that there's something. Something I do want to give out about, it's something about I don't know, like, I know wrestling is, it's, you know, based on stereotypes, and it's, you know, it's ingrained into their culture, and that's why Americans love it. But the Iron Sheik, he's from Tehran, Iran, right? And he's partners with Volkov. But the superpowers were on Iraq's side during the long and bloody Iran-Iraq war. Russia supplied Saddam with large amounts of conventional arms, so they should be on the other side. They should hate each other. Even worse, years to come, Sheik would be renamed Colonel Mustafa, and he was in the pro-Iraq storyline with Sergeant Slaughter. That's horrific. It's like, all right, imagine if wrestling in the 1920s, we wrestled under a pro-IRA gimmick, you know, Shamrock's Leprechaun, 26 and 6. Then we were repackaged with three lines on the shirt, Union Jack loving Brits, in 1920. Actually, 1960. Like, imagine that. That's how bad it would be for Iran and Iraq.
Because,
like,
as we all know, Iraq is on someone's girl's body.
What's that are you talking about?
Iraq.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, okay. Can we cut that one out as well?
Still your right material. Okay, so backstage, Oakland gets in a word with the new WWF Tag Team Champions as she poses with the championship for a picture that nobody's taking. Anything of... interest,
Dave? The Gene Mean comment, which I had a little chuckle, but I love to see the Sheik at all times, as we all
know. Yeah. Nothing of fact magnitude, anyway.
Yeah.
So, as you were saying earlier, Lord Alfred Hayes, he's not quite at ringside, he's not quite backstage, as he dares to call the next contest intriguing, if I dare say so. $15,000 at stake, Big John Studd with Bobby Heenan versus Andre the Giant in a Power Slam Challenge match. He goes over the steps and throws to Mean Gene with Studd and Heenan in a pre-tape. So did I say anything interesting?
Said nothing of interest whatsoever. Heenan wasn't great, to be honest, on his interview. You know, I'm always expecting something hilarious. You know, he usually has a good one-liner.
Yeah.
He had some kind of one-liner in there about the next person to see this money would be the bank teller when we're lodging it in the account.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing of interest. He wasn't at his game.
That's a shame. Just a bit of trivia here. In late 1984, Ken Patera and Studd shaved off Andre's afro. So you see his kind of shorter hair now. So there were two huge stiffs in this match. If Andre the Giant won, he'd get $15,000 of Studd's money. But if Studd wins, Andre must retire from wrestling. Just a couple of things on that. I imagine, like, with stiffs like that, they'd initially broach the actual retirement of a wrestler, because you wouldn't kind of start doing, do you want to retire, stiffs until kind of late in their career, you know?
Yep.
Also, it was kind of, wasn't that high on the card, was it?
No, it was an afterthought almost.
Hmm.
One thing I did note was initially, because obviously I haven't watched this pay-per-view in years, I was thinking very heelish that Andre was taking this match for the money.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, what transpired after the match changed things, but I did think it wasn't the face should have taken the match, money or no money.
That's true. I think it was just to make them seem less bushly by having, hey, we have some money. Mm. But if you're going to lie about giving money out, you might as well make it, you know, 50,000 or something. Yeah. Something a little more extravagant. Very real, 15,000. Like,
yeah, it was, yeah.
Don't lose that. That's your pay. Yeah.
Don't be giving it out to the audience. Yeah. Giving that other Monopoly stuff.
I've got a question. Okay, in this body slam match, it was Andre, he had to slam Big John Studd. So Andre is 486 pounds and Studd is 367, so that's more than 100 pounds lighter.
Yeah. Shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, yeah, because they haven't played up like that Andre would have any spinal problems or anything like that. So, yeah, what's the problem here? Of course you can do it.
Yeah, Big John Studd is big and impressive, but he's dwarfed in comparison to Andre.
Is any notes on the match here?
Nothing really. It was slow, plodding, typical big man match. Bear hug in there for God knows how long. Long bear hug. You know, it went on and on and on. Andre was very sloppy. I'm not sure if 5 years previously he would have looked a lot better, but some of his chops, his kicks at the end, I thought it was quite funny actually that he was kicking Big John Studd's legs at the end of the match to wear him down to body slam. But obviously, non-kayfabe, the person who's taking the body slam has to jump. So I just thought that was quite funny that he's kicking his legs. So if he injured Big John Studd's legs when he was kicking him, he wouldn't have been able to slam him. But anyway,
there's no finish. Gotta change the finish.
Yeah, gotta change the finish.
I suppose as well with kicking someone's legs, I think just that was as high as he could lift his leg. Like,
yeah, it looked that way.
So you really gotta work for Andre to make him look good.
I actually read Bobby Heenan's book quite recently. Did you? And it's typical, I'm great. You know, I'm the reason that wrestling was ever popular. You know, typical wrestling book. But I digress. He mentioned John Studd was actually a lovely guy.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it is.
Did you know there was actually some kind of time limit to this body slam in this match as well?
Okay.
They didn't ever say what the time limit was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They just mentioned it. Oh, there's a time limit. So
okay.
There you go. Fine. How do you feel about the getting the money, throwing it out, and then running away with it?
Really good.
Yeah?
Loved it.
Good heel act, thanks.
Yeah, loved it. And it actually, because that's what I was saying before the match, I was saying very heelish, but then Andre goes throwing the money out, which is great, and then Bobby Heenan grabbing the bag. That was top notch.
Does that count as a bullshit finish, though?
It counts as theft.
Because, you know, I want to throw... Yeah, I suppose.
Well, what I found interesting is that, yeah, I would have referred to this match as like the easy money challenge or something, because, you know, he was undefeated at this point, Andre, and I never really thought he's going to lose. So I thought, yeah, he's going on this money. And I do think, yeah, it was interesting that, you know, sort of like a Batman, you know, Joker trying to yeah, the crowd. You know?
But... I just pick
it was on. Fake money. Yeah. You couldn't throw out real money. You couldn't throw out fake money.
It I suppose it reminds me a bit of Million Dollar Mania. Vince, you know, I can imagine them eating. How do we stop this? How do we stop giving away my money? Oh, we'll have the set following me, and we won't mention Million Dollar Mania again. And then I'll call Triple H by his real name, and it'll all be real.
The set's following my general area.
You follow,
Paul. You okay?
I'm supposed to stop Andre throwing out the fake money and the crowd knowing it's fake and calling bullshit. They have Heenan grab it and run away.
Yeah. Do you know they've done the exact same thing about 14 years later? Vince McMahon offered $100,000 to the Royal Rumble 99 to throw out Austin. And in the end, he threw out Austin, but with the help of The Rock. And so he gave The Rock $100,000 and gave it to him the next night on Raw. And then Foley grabbed it off him, and I think he threw Mussin upwards of $50 into the crowd.
Really? Upwards?
Yeah. between 50 and 60.
And what happened?
That was it. They just went to commercial and, all right, stop that shit.
Give it back. $5 bills.
That's coming out of your page. Right?
Okay, so now we got Alfred Hayes, who talks about the WWF ladies title match.
Ladies.
Ooh, the ladies.
This was apparently... Yeah. The first of two Rock Wrestling Connection matches.
Mm.
What was the second one?
I'd assume it was the main event there with Mr. T and Hogan.
Oh, Mr. T, the big rock star himself.
Big rock star. And plenty of gold platinum hits there, you know. Yeah, isn't it a shame they didn't call Hogan's belt the Gentleman's Championship?
That's right, Mean Gene, Shmuller, Lanny Carr, you better watch out, because these are powerful words, because this is a powerful woman, and I'm a powerful manager now, because I was taught by Captain Lou Albano just how to manage.
Wendy Richter, your thoughts?
I didn't lose that belt to one person. I lost it because Moolah interfered in my match, and I'm dead set on getting it back where it belongs.
All right, ladies, please, ladies, I thank you very much. Cyndi Lauper and Wendy Richter, the opposing view right now for the reigning champion, Leilani Kai, and, of course, Moolah, where did you get those glasses?
My jeweler made them for me for special occasion for tonight because he's so proud of me and my champion, Leilani Kai.
Well, don't tell Jesse Ventura about it. Yes, Leilani Kai, time to
defense. I am good and ready. I don't care what I got to do or how I got to do it to beat Wendy. I am going to do it. I'm going to come back dressing with my hand and Victor.
Okay, within reason, please, ladies. Part of WrestleMania, Leilani Kai, Moolah in her corner to be challenged by Wendy Richter with Cyndi Lauper in her corner.
Okay, so we got Leilani Kai as the champion versus Wendy Richter. And was there any promo beforehand?
Yeah, it was, I think, Lauper cut a promo talking about how she was trained by Lou Albano or something like that. It was fine.
This is the first like backstage one I got to see, and I just noticed she kept saying the word powerful. Like, if you actually split something, she says it maybe five times. She's only talking for 15 seconds. But she said powerful like four or five times.
Really?
It was ridiculous. Isn't it? And how'd you like Wendy Richter with her yuck promo? It's like, I'm going to get you. Ah, I don't like you. It's, oh, Jesus Christ.
It was, it was a typical, you know, yuck, as you say. But I didn't think she was too bad, to be honest. I assume this was a couple of years before the screw job, wasn't it?
Oh, actually, that was coming up very soon. Actually, this is the screw out of the belt, yeah.
Which was very interesting.
Yeah. Then it cuts to Mean Gene, who stands there with Moolah and Kai and has to pretend that he only just now saw Moolah's glasses. And she fumbles through her promo. I'll actually have to give out to her because she was women's champion in like NWA and WWF for 28 years. Over 10,000 days. And this is the promo you're giving me. This is like 3-4 fuck-ups in 10 seconds. It was a disgrace. What did you think of the luau outfit from Leilani Kai?
She's from Hawaii, therefore naturally she has to wear that kind of outfit. Hello, Jay, come on.
All right.
What did you think of
it? It was quite nice. It wasn't quite as nice as Richter's outfit. I will give it, like, this match was only, what 4 minutes or something? So, you know, that's perfect. I wasn't saddened, but I was shocked that there was no real spot from Cyndi Lauper. Like, she didn't... I think she did maybe a small schmoz outside the ring, but, yeah, nothing really, you know.
I actually thought this match was quite decent, for a woman's match, anyway, and I thought it was probably better than a lot of the matches that had gone before.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing, do you want to mention anything? I'm just going to talk about the finish.
If I'm just going through it... We get a theme, well-publicised run to the ring. You want to see, like, WWE just completely whore out the shot of Cyndi Lauper running to the ring backstage, Lauper and Richter, and it's a dub theme because they would have come out to Girls Just Want to Have Fun live, but of course they don't want to pay for it now.
On the version I was watching, they did have girls.
Did they? Yeah. This is bullshit. Yeah. This is Silver Vision not paying, like... Yeah, we get a lot of this not paying for themes. You know, you might do it live once, but then you just dub over it, and the DVD really does take away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, just if anyone doesn't know or isn't a child from the 80s, Cyndi Lauper was a big 80s music phenomenon, now an icon for garish, awful 80s music and fashion.
It wasn't that awful.
Name one other song she has.
The one from the Goonies.
Okay, one more song.
And I seem to remember you dancing to Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
But she was probably the biggest music star at the time. So these women had swimming togs on rather than, you know, wrestling outfits. But they're still better than what Winter's wearing today, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice anything about women's wrestling here? It's something kind of random, is that silence. It's like they weren't shouting. See, women today, it's like a fucking tennis match. Like, it's just, rah, rah, See, I'm not punching, so I'm not my lady, and I shout, you know. But this is just quiet, you know. It's like, I don't know, Japanese.
It's
match, just
quite nice.
Yeah, yeah. Richter, real nice arse, well done. Leilani Kai, you look like a housewife.
Leilani Kai got a right nice grab of Richter's arse, actually, towards the end of the match.
Actually, the ref did sneak an arse pat when Kai was leaving leaving the ring, so, you know, good for her. Just there was an awkward back breaker as well, which just did not look nice. Alright, do you want to take us to the finish?
The finish, what I really noticed was that they had
tan lines.
There was a bit of that, yeah. But they had the slow motion replay of the finish, and it was practically the entire match by the look of things. The replay, it was what was it, Leilani Kai with a crossbody block off the top rope, really sloppy. There was the roll through just completely messed up. So anyway, they kind of landed on the ground, and then Richter kind of flipped over, you know, got the pin, and away she went. And then you have the obviously the other iconic image of who's it, Leila or Cyndi Lauper jumping into Richter's arms afterwards. We see that quite a lot, just like the run-in, which is, you know, I think they're pretty cool images.
Yeah, yeah, it's good to actually see when they actually happen. So are we ready for the main events?
Just the interview afterwards.
Oh, god damn!
Did you not see an interview
this
afterwards?
This is bullshit.
Really?
Yeah.
Lauper looked an absolute state. She had lipstick all
before
over
after
her teeth.
The match. Yeah.
She had lipstick all over her teeth. Really distracting and quite horrible. But go on. One thing I just wanted to mention that I noticed in this match and previously, one of your pet hates, Jay, was Ventura. Every time, you know, somebody hit their opponent, it was to the face area, the sternum area. So yeah, reminded me of Taz. So there you go.
Fuck's sake! I did. I think they sound smarter when they say area. The chestal region, the backal area. Fuck's sake!
Maybe if it's, you know, Cyndi Lauper, you don't know what you're
doing. It's just a big dog's dinner area. Yeah.
Alright, so it's time for the main event. Thank God, 2-hour pay-per-view. Imagine if this was 3 hours. So we got Billy Martin, best known for playing baseball for the Yankees in the 50s, managing in two, blah, blah, blah. He's the guest ring announcer. Muhammad Ali, the 3-time World Heavyweight Boxing Champion, one of the greatest boxers of all time. He's the guest outside referee.
Outside referee.
So
yes.
He'll get an entrance and do nothing.
Yep.
I have to say, just, you know, the way he changed his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali when he converted to Islam. Cassius Clay is a fucking awesome
name. It is. I've always thought it. Why would you change your name?
Yeah. Jeez. Like, that's a gimmick in itself.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Did you see, citing Pat Patterson getting his first of many WrestleMania payoff appearances. He doesn't do anything, but he'll get on camera and get a paycheck.
Uh-huh. Why is that? He's just Vince's mate?
Yeah. He managed, like, he'll work out different spots, like, Miss Elizabeth, she'll need some protection going to the ring, sure, I'll go out and do that. By the way, you know, cut us a check, you know. So just, you know, keep an eye out for him in future manias.
One thing I'm glad they've done away with is guest ring announcers, guest timekeepers in the main events at WrestleMania. Liberace was the guest timekeeper, and he was just doing the can-can for about 5 minutes.
You got to see the can-can.
You didn't see the can-can?
No, I didn't.
Version where you watch.
this is
another iconic
shit.
Image.
Yeah. Because I was actually given. I was waiting until it was only dawned on me until I finished the pay-per-view that there. Where is this can-can? Because they show it all the time, you know. So I was able to see Kid Rock's performance with the Divas coming out, but not Liberace doing the can-can.
You didn't miss much, but it's still, as I said, iconic.
Man, I gotta get this WWE version instead. That's depressing me.
Yeah.
So Piper shows up with his entourage of bagpipe players and ace cowboy Bob Orton.
Yeah, what's this ace business?
I don't know, maybe he thinks that's awesome, I guess. Why do you have two
models? Yeah, that's it. What are you, ace or cowboy?
Ace, Bob Orton, cowboy. I guess maybe there are a lot of cowboys, so, like, he's
the ace in the hole.
The ace in the hole, yeah. Maybe Ace Hole.
Okay, we'll stick with that.
All right. So
Piper's entrance was great, by the way.
Mm. Do you like the live band? Are you a fan of live bands?
Well, sure. What was it, WrestleMania 24 scene that had the band?
Oh, yeah.
And you know I love that. So.
Yeah, very good. He's tagging with Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff. He's heel here, so you can be Mr. Wonderful if you're a heel. So, I don't know, some quintessentially 80s song hits as Hogan and Mr. T make their way to the background. We didn't get Real American. What did you get? Did you get Real American?
Yeah.
God damn it. So Snuka follows them, so bit of a mania payoff there
as well.
Bit of a
payday, yeah.
When you see that iconic image as Hogan and Mr. T, you know, make their way to the ring backstage, and you can see Vince in the background. And
I didn't notice Vince.
Yeah. Oh, you can see him do a bit of zooming, I actually made a point. What's Liberace doing? What the fuck? You know? What, get in the ring. Do something.
But he rang the bell.
Oh, good for him. That was it.
You didn't see that either. No, he was sitting outside the ring, and they had the camera on for about a minute.
Is he the ding-a-ling-a-ling?
Like? Yeah, then he had the ding-a-ling-a-ling.
That wasn't the real bell, though.
No, but I think he actually hit... Oh, no, he didn't. I don't think he had the ring bell in front of him. I think somebody hit the ring bell, and then he stands up and did his ding-a-ling.
He rang a bell.
Yeah.
But not the bell.
Probably not the bell. So that was great. Anyway. He got a payday.
Okay. Hulk Hogan with Mr. T versus the tag team of Piper and Orndorff.
Can I just give out a couple of things?
Yeah.
The main one is there was not one single mention of this match throughout the entire pay-per-view that I noticed.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
What was that about?
It was the fastest running 2 hours in sports entertainment history. I've no idea. Maybe promo packages didn't exist back then.
You don't need a promo package. You just need the commentators to mention the match every now and again. The main event's coming up.
Yeah,
get people excited about the main event. I did not see one mention of this match.
Mm-hmm.
Or hear one mention of this match.
Maybe they only had, 6 minutes of pre-tape footage. Couldn't do the main event.
Oh god, no. Yeah, there was no pre-match interview for this one.
That sucks. We did have time for the Executioner and Valentine, but not Hulk Hogan in this city.
And a couple other things. I know we're spoiled with promo packages these days.
Yeah.
Really hurts WrestleMania 1 and probably the next, I don't know, 3 or 4 WrestleManias, that there are no promo packages because at the time, fair enough, if we were watching it, at the time we would have known what was going on. But watching it back now, having a clue. Having a clue what the build-up was in any way, shape or form, because the commentators don't mention build-ups at all either. There is a little bit about Santana and Valentine. Other than that, really didn't see anything or hear anything as to why these people didn't like each other and wanted to get in the ring to wrestle each other.
I suppose they had already assumed that if you're ordering the pay-per-view, you've already seen MTV's, the war to settle the score and the brawl for it all, which I'll remind you, scores were not settled and all was not brawled.
And it's interesting that the comments you're making about the promos, because even now, just for a main event, we would have the promo right before the event. Yeah, we know it's going to be on, so we don't need it right before. But definitely, out of 9 matches there from WrestleMania, as I've said before, that 12-minute slugger, match, you'd want it there. That'd be halfway through the pay-per-view. But it's interesting that, even the night before on Saturday Night Live, Mr. T and Hogan were really hosting the show together, trying to kind of get people to watch WrestleMania 1. So it's interesting they go to that extent, but then not for the entire pay-per-view mention what's going to come up.
Yeah.
But I kind of like to talk about some of the history of even about, Mr. T and even Hulk Hogan and how we were actually quite lucky to even have Hulk Hogan in WrestleMania 1 in terms of, him being fired by Vince for actually appearing, in Rocky 3. Again, he had to go under the name of Thunderlips. So we were quite lucky that he was even available to be involved with this. And then also, in part of the promotion of the WWF, he actually got involved with a $5 million lawsuit where he appeared on Hot Properties to promote WrestleMania. And he put basically the host, which is Richard Bresler, in a front chin lock. Not exactly one of the moves you would associate with Hulk Hogan. But presenter actually started bleeding profusely and became unconscious. And so,
it's a worker issue.
No, this is real. Oh. So it settled out of court anyway. So I mean, we're quite lucky this guy even showed up, you know. But interesting is that this relationship between Mr. T and Hogan would continue into even into the 18 and you know, series 4, episode 7, Body Slam.
Thank you, man.
Where,
well done, well done.
Interesting, Hulk Hogan is Tony Kayfabe, actually is in character as Hulk Hogan.
Really?
With B.A. Brockus. So it's interesting that this kind of lineage of these two characters, and again, going back to the comment of the kind of, you know, rock and wrestling, is where Vince is kind of beginning to blur the lines between wrestling and entertainment, even from a very, very early stage. I think it's very clever, but also kind of very interesting marketing strategy. So this is kind of my kind of two cents on kind of build up in terms of they did a lot of it out in the mainstream media, but none of it in the ring.
I like that.
Oh, very good. Wow, interesting. Just want to mention that this is the only WrestleMania to not feature a WWF or E championship match.
That was the next thing I was going to give out about.
I didn't want giving out.
What were they thinking? This is the first WrestleMania, the biggest event of all time up to that point.
It was built.
Yeah.
And they're not promoting their championship.
See, we settled the score on MTV, so, you know, Mania doesn't matter. Like,
yeah.
Who gives a shit about Mania, you know?
Is there any reason why they didn't have Piper versus T and Orndorff versus Hogan?
Well, we would get... Yeah, I guess. Yeah, no. We did get Piper T next year. Is that something?
It's something, but it's not enough.
It's the nothing, right?
Yeah.
Did you hear about the urban legend about the AWA promoter Vern Gagne, that he offered Bruiser Brody $100,000 to break Mr. T's leg?
I heard that, yeah.
And Sheik says he was offered the money to break Hogan's leg, you know. If you didn't know, Vern Gagne, Hulk Hogan, as Noah was saying there, when Hogan went to go film Rocky, Vince Sr. was pissed over and said, you know, you're a wrestler, you're not an entertainer, which, you know, and so he said, no, I'm going to do this film, and so they parted ways, and so Hogan went to the AWA instead, and, you know, he was doing his Hulkamania gimmick, you know, and but so he was over in Japan, New Japan, and he was in the AWA in America, and he was making loads of money, so he'd actually print t-shirts and sell the t-shirts, so, he, you know, he knew about merchandising, he totally George Lucas did, and
just like Earl Evans.
And Vern Gagne, yeah, they couldn't agree over how much of a cut Vern Gagne should get in the AWA. So he left because they couldn't come to terms with it. And yeah, like he wanted more power over Hogan's booking in Japan and also wanted a bigger cut of his merch.
Yep, he was on the losing end of that one. Yeah.
It's interesting that, you know, we kind of refer always to Hogan as a shrewd operator, but in many ways you can see the environment in which he learned it from. You know, the idea of, you know, money's power in this case, you know, to actually control, have a creative control, but also have the money to go with it. So it's interesting how you can see him getting involved with those kind of politics and strategy already.
But who do you think he learned it off initially? Is he just the innovator of politicking, or was there somebody that he kind of, somebody took him under his wing? I've never heard of anyone in particular that kind of mentored Hogan.
Like I imagine that. That was a tough question. Who did Hogan learn his bullshit politicking from? I guess he invented it. I guess, like I reckon maybe he saw other people being screwed over in the wrestling business, and maybe he had some friends when he was an up-and-coming wrestler and saw, I gotta protect my own property. And maybe like Vince, he was just kind of an entrepreneur, he knew where it was going and how much money was at stake, so he made sure to protect his ass above everything else.
Yeah.
I think so, and actually that's kind of similar to the comments that Kevin Nash first said to Shawn Michaels when they met. You know, he thought, who's this little guy? But when he heard the voice and the kind of focus, and he understood actually this guy is, you know, he knows what he's doing, you know. So I think, yeah, there probably is a good bit of original kind of shrewdness with Hogan. He did know what to do, but I think, you know, you're going to learn in that environment, you know.
Now, actually, when was Rocky III released?
Basically, it would be 1982 is when that was at.
So that's 3 years before WrestleMania 1.
So if you think about it then with, like, Starcade or something coming out there. Yeah, 1983. You know, a lot of people forget that, like, you know, a lot of that Vince emulated. and just improved on with more media.
That's a fine word for style.
Promotion. So it's interesting that, like, you know, you've got this lineage from really starting in 1982 up until, you know, the basically 1985 here.
It was a complete U-turn then. So Hogan was fired for appearing in Rocky III, and then 2 years later, whatever, Mr. T is in the main event at WrestleMania.
Yeah, well, yeah. One was Vince Sr. firing Hogan, the other one's Vince Jr. welcoming him back.
Uh-huh.
Like, it was really whoever has Hulk Hogan's already a star from Rocky, so whoever has Hulk Hogan, their promotion is going to make it. And so you got to hand it to Brent Gagne. He's like, Hulk Hogan, Hulkamania? Nah. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. Nah, sure, you're going to fail. Who cares about that? You're just Hulk Hogan, the biggest star in all of entertainment right now. But I've got an ace up my sleeve. I've got Greg Gagne.
Greg Gagne.
Greg-a-mania.
But it is interesting, yeah, the lineage of it. And then, you know, obviously Stallone inducting into the Hall of Fame and still having amazing things to say about Hogan. So that's pretty interesting that, like, you know, the kind of talent maybe he saw in both Hogan and Mr. T, you know, in terms of actual characters, or even now, we talk about these kind of iconic archetypes. You know, this is really why they still are, even in our generation now, because they're just so loud, they're so original, you know, there's, you know, even the bright colours, you can say.
Yeah, I was going to mention actually about the bright colours that during this match, it's pretty much black all the way around Madison Square Garden, and you can just see Hogan.
Should we talk about this match?
Okay.
At just the very start, you notice that Piper seemingly shoots on BA, taking him down to the mat. We would hear more about this the next time around, but it's like he is representing wrestling against Mr. Entertainment. You know, he's the real phony, if you know what I mean. So there's a bit of that. Turns into a schmoz pretty quickly. If you notice, that asshole Snuka went to the top rope to do a spot, but someone else missed a cue, and so he had to just jump back down. And
I didn't see that.
Oh, it's great.
Maybe he didn't like the look of those ropes.
Yeah.
Monsoon calls bullshit that the pay-per-view will not end this way, because it just turns into big schmoz. The police agree and usher the heels to go back to the schmoz and continue. How do you like the double noggin knocker?
Gotta love it. It's pretty special. What was the commentary on that? He's smashed both of their heads together, as opposed to just smashing one of their heads together. I'm just being picky here. Okay.
It has to be Monsoon, was it?
No, I think it was Ventura.
Really?
I think it was Ventura.
We probably bit of rose tinted glasses. Much like Gorilla Monsoons when coming to their commentary.
Yeah.
I thought Mr. T was pretty smartly used. He, you Definitely. Know, just a couple of slaps and headbutts, that kind of thing.
He was decent.
Mm-hmm.
He got gassed though.
Yeah. but he was on tuna fish for the last 3 weeks. So,
and water.
Yeah, and water. Well done. No, just tuna fish. So Hogan practically carries all of the work on his team, as expected. It's made less obvious with the heels working over Hogan for most of the match. So did you notice that Mr. T had to hold the string as the tag partner?
Yes.
Don't you fucking love wrestling rules?
Yes.
It's like
textbook.
I love it. It's like at the starter match, Gino actually mentioned that Orndorff, he did need to tag in Piper to start the match because no contact had been made in the match. So
they
yeah.
commented on that, yeah.
That's fucking amazing.
That's really good. I appreciate that. And then, as soon as they said it, Hogan did exactly the same thing.
Orton and Snuka interfere again as Orton gets the top rope for a spot, who's late, until he shouts at Orndorff to turn around, which leads to the finish. Do you want to take us through it?
I don't know. I mean, it was...
No.
Yeah, so the top rope spot... actually quite executed quite well, to be honest. Hogan gets out of the way, looked decent, and amazingly my jaw dropped. There was no big leg drop, no immortal leg drop. I couldn't believe he resisted the immortal leg drop to finish the match. He just pinned him.
That is that's really weird, isn't it?
Yes,
it's crazy. Good luck with that. Not seeing that again. So mostly a schmoz angle for 13 minutes, but the crowd loved it, you know?
Yeah.
Would you imagine them shitting on this match if this... Well, they actually did this year, with
Flair.
Oh, I was thinking of Miz and Cena.
Oh, sorry.
You saw it, like, it was just a schmoz for a couple of minutes, and then they stopped the match. Like,
yeah.
And then they restarted it, and then a bit of a bullshit finish. But the face won this.
And it was highly entertaining. It was not good in any way, shape, or form, but it was it was certainly there.
And just after, I don't know if you saw this, but after the match, Jesse Ventura went over to finish the Type Mania, and then you see Mr. T Hulk do an interview. Get an interview in, and then some stills, and then some public domain classical music, and we're out.
Just a comment on the post-match interview. You could really tell Hogan wanted the last word, because they were interviewing T, Hogan, and Snuka.
Yeah.
And, T was fine, Snuka was his usual crappy self, and Hogan just kept trying to keep getting in there. And then I think T actually got the last word. He said, yeah.
Actually, the last word.
And I noticed as well...
Hogan did a voiceover in post-production to get the last word.
He sang I'm a Real American. And as an addendum to that, I didn't mention it, was that at the entrance as well, something similar, T walked out first and almost blocked Hogan. You couldn't really see Hogan walking out. I can't imagine he was happy with that. I just think they were jostling for position the whole way from the very beginning to the very end.
The T pull Alfred Hayes like in between them.
And then as soon as the still started, I turned it off. So did I miss anything?
Right. Oh, God, no. just to check, just in case they had their interviews at the end, since I didn't see any during the pay-per-view. So that's the end of the pay-per-view. So is it March 31, 1985, Madison Square Garden in New York, attendance 22,000. No pay-per-views. It was a closed circuit attendance, which is so pay-per-view in a cinema, which is really weird. But it wasn't that long. It was actually the Wrestling Classic, which is pay-per-view in 6 months' time, which is actually the first pay-per-view. Like there would have been. They would have just had like a test audience of pay-per-view here, so that's really negligible. But 380,000 people did catch it on the closed circuit.
Very good.
So just a quick recap of WrestleMania 1. So Santana beat the Executioner with a figure four. Bundy squashed Special Delivery Jones. The Big Steamer quelled Matt Bourne. Beefcake couldn't carry David Sammartino to a passable match. JYD won via countout, but not Valentine's belt. The heel foreigners upset the American faces to capture the tag titles. Andre slams Big John Studd, no problem. And Lauper's girl, Wendy Richter, gets the win and the belts for the payoff in that feud. So good for them.
And there was one other match as well.
Oh, was there? Which?
The
main event, presumably. No, we don't need to hear about that. I'm sure no one's going to buy a pay-per-view based on the main event. Like. That was just a schmoz, though, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, but... No, Hogan got the
pin. Yeah. But it was like everyone just went in and then big pylon, stop the match, restart the match, bit of a pylon, and then...
Actually, it was...
Stop saying the word pylon.
I'm going to actually maybe apologise to Jesse, because even we forgot there was a main event.
And so what do you think of this pay-per-view, Neil?
Well, it's kind of interesting going back over it even, kind of even researching the match on the WWE website. It's actually, there's very little original photographs from it, in terms of, apart from the actual, like we have a kind of a mixed viewing of it because of the different edits that we're given in terms of videos. But it's interesting, even if you want to see any more information in terms of like backstage and the photographs, it's only like one or two photographs on the site. So it was kind of starting at that point, looking back at another angle rather than just being, you know, when you're a kid watching it once, you know, looking at it as an adult, kind of seeing how it was put together, what was happening in terms of an idea on WrestleMania. It was very interesting to see the concept and where that would go, because obviously jostling against Starrcade, Vince basically had to come up with something unique and original to push the brand. And, you know, if it wasn't for these moves, which seem quite crude now, you know, we wouldn't be heading on towards WrestleMania 27. So it's interesting to see that lineage. But, you know, looking back to the matches, I mean, obviously, it's easy to be a backseat driver and say, I would have done this, I would have done this. But, I mean, I have to say, you know, it was entertaining. I didn't think it was going to be. But having said it, when I looked at it, yeah, it was actually not bad.
You only took, what, 2 tries to get through this?
Yeah.
2? Yeah, very good.
That's good.
I think I'm a 3. Yeah, so...
I am used to watching 2.5 minutes, so I built up a little bit of tolerance, maybe.
It took me probably about 6 tries to get through it today. Really.
We were supposed to start recording it for us. Like, yeah, I'm just started.
I was putting it off, to be
still
honest.
Still watching that Valentine promo.
I was putting it off, to be honest, because I watched this. The last time I watched this, what age was I? My friend in school gave me the video, and I was all excited. I think I was 10, 9 or 10 or something. And at the time, I remember thinking, this is great. You know, because of the fact it's the first ever WrestleMania, and I was a kid watching it, and I thought it was brilliant. Looking at it now, you know what I'm going to say. I thought it was terrible. I thought it was horrendous from the start to the finish. When I was saying throughout this, oh, it wasn't too bad. I mean, don't take that out of context.
That's relative to 1985.
It's completely relative to the era. If we saw that, if say WrestleMania 28 was something similar, it would just be a complete and utter disaster. It really would.
Have the promos gotten any better?
Not really, no. That's one thing that stayed the same. So I don't do stars or ratings, but I would definitely recommend avoiding at all costs. And Jay?
Would you listen to this podcast, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Loads of times.
Yeah. Listen to a skip out for an hour and 17 minutes.
It'll take it 8 times to get through.
Maybe you can get through this the first time, though. Yeah. I reckon, do not watch this paper. Jesus Christ. Like, the state of it. Like, you know, you could, you know, at least, you know, we're doing something constructive having watched it, but, like, I wouldn't put it, well, I don't know, if you needed to go to sleep, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
You'd go to sleep at a protest pretty quickly, like.
And the one abiding memory I have of it is it was just so dark in Madison Square Garden. Dark. Like.
This is before lighting the crowd, all right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like how UFC is now. They just light the middle and then the rest of it's just black. Like.
Wrestling is awesome!
Awesome! Awesome!
Okay, so just to talk about something quite easy. This is just a segment to talk about anything that makes you love wrestling a bit more. Anything that you want to find. So usually it'd be either like a cameo or a film with wrestlers in it, you know, or anything wrestling related that you can find outside of the wrestling bubble.
Funny enough, that 2 Hulk Hogan wrestling related things is that before Vicky, Hulk Hogan had returned to WWE, you know, like not many people would have known about him where he was, but. I remember on my way to school and 2FM was on and the bus driver usually played, and when he basically won the title of the WWE when Hogan returned, it was actually announced on 2FM and people on the bus actually remarked on it, and so that was kind of an incredible moment.
Positively, or
they did get, in terms of, you know, or like a kind of a figure that they know kind of through media, like, and even people that weren't really necessarily fans but could relate to that, and I thought that was really interesting. And then obviously my favourite Hulk Hogan moment is...
I just want to say that Ireland is not... You know, the wrestling is not indigenous to Ireland, so for it to be mentioned on general radio or any kind of media is pretty big.
And then the other one for Hulk Hogan is Gremlins 2, where, you know, if I was to go watch a movie, I would wear the belt as well and eat my popcorn. And I do like when he says to the Gremlins, you know, like, put the movie back on. That they actually do, because they're scared of him. And he's just, you know, he's so kayfabe and amazing. So they were my kind of, you know, just... wrestling can still, you know, contribute in a huge way to movies.
We have gremlins in the projection booth. Could you help us?
Gremlins? In this theater? Now? Okay, you guys, listen up. People pay good money to see this movie. When they go out to a theater, they want cold sodas, hot popcorn, and no monsters in the projection booth. Do I have to come up there myself? Do you think the Grimsters can stand up to the Hulkster? Well, if I were you, I'd run the rest of Gremlins 2 right now.
Sorry, folks. It won't happen again.
Alright. So that's WrestleMania 1 in the books. So I hope you enjoyed the show. Next on the list is WrestleMania 2, But I'm going to take a little detour from the beaten path and review WWE's first fully fledged pay-per-view offering, the Wrestling Classic. Head to Facebook, search for OSW Review, or go to oswreview.com. Join the group, tell me how much of an asshole I am. This is Jay Hunter with Mr. OC.
Good night.
Neil.
Adios.
Signing out.